I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Their business is firearms and business is booming. The gun industry has been very effective in marketing their products to Oregonians. And today on the show, you'll hear from two marketing experts who will explain why they're so good at getting the public to buy guns. Michelle Barnhart, Associate Professor of Marketing with the College of Business at Oregon State University, and Amy Huff, who's also Associate Professor of Marketing for the College of Business at Oregon State University. Thanks so much for coming on and talking with us.
Sure, thanks for having us.
We're excited to be here. Thanks.
So we're talking today about the fact that Oregon is one of the leaders in the United States in terms of gun sales and number of guns that are owned by people in the state of Oregon. And you're both experts on marketing, and certainly you also write and talk a lot about marketing for the gun industry. So I kind of wanted to start. Let's start with you, Michelle. You know, talk about how guns are marketed to consumers, and perhaps even compare and contrast marketing strategies for guns versus other items. Are there similarities or really, really big differences between marketing a firearm versus a car or a wireless phone or something like that?
Thanks, Michael. So there are some differences, and that is in part due to the fact that there are a lot of media outlets that won't carry gun advertising. Mm. So you won't see an ad for a gun on a broadcast television station. Most social media platforms have restrictions about selling guns. So the channels that are open to gun marketers are more restricted than those that are open to other sorts of marketers of consumer products. Hmm. It's not a federal law or anything. It's just strictly a choice made by the media outlets that they don't want to carry that type of promotional material. So largely guns are marketed through still print advertising is very popular. So guns like Guns and Ammo magazine or American Rifleman, which is an NRA publication. So there would be ads in those types of outlets. They are the manufacturers of guns are now leveraging social media influencers more because the social media influencers can somewhat get around some of the restrictions that are put on the platforms in regards to direct sales. And of course, there is a lot of product placement with guns. So video games, there might be branded or at least guns that look very similar to particular brands being shown in the video game itself as a product placement. So those are some of the more common ways that they do it, as well as through retailers and gun shows, you know, booths at gun shows and things like that.
Interesting. You know, to follow up on that, I remember a marketing professor I had years ago talked about this strategy of marketing, and he said it this way. You can either market to the lake or you can market to the fish. And what he meant by that was, you know, sort of broad marketing just over general consumers would be, you know, one strategy. But you're probably going to miss a lot of people because they may not be interested in the product. It sounds to me like when you talk about those magazine publications that are a lot of times subscription-based, and they're certainly their content is very much driven to a potential gun owner, that would be like marketing to the fish, very, very specific to a niche audience. Do I have that kind of right?
Yeah, that's correct, Michael. This is Michelle again. The ads that are in those magazines like Guns and Ammo or Recoil magazine is a newer magazine. They are unlikely to be seen by people who aren't already interested in guns. Mm-hmm. And we do know that there are about 30% of people in the United States report that they own personally a gun. Many of them own just maybe one, maybe two guns. And then there are a few people who are real gun enthusiasts who own many guns. And so the gun enthusiasts are the folks who are more likely to be subscribing to these magazines, and the folks who are generally interested in guns already are the ones who are likely to pick them up at the grocery store or something like that.
Okay. Amy, obviously, you know, guns are more than just, say, you know, a stereo or something like that. They're obviously extremely dangerous, but they also, you know, they I would imagine from a marketing perspective, you know, part of the message might be around the idea that there's status, there's power, there's strength, maybe even machismo around it. Talk a little bit about sort of the psychology of marketing something like a firearm.
Thank you. So this is Amy. I will be happy to speak a little bit about that. So US gun culture has forever been a deeply masculine space, a very masculine domain, very oriented to values around power and strength and authority. And within that, we see that guns have become a symbol of those particular things and a way to kind of symbolize power and strength. And the guns are particularly interesting in their ability to convey those meanings because they do two things at the same time. The first is that they are able to, in a practical way, be very powerful. Having a gun in my hand makes me instantly able to deploy lethal force against someone else or something else. And depending on the firearm, I could do that with very little skill or sort of advanced preparation. So there's this practical ability to defend myself, my family against something that's threatening. And there's this very powerful symbolic power of a firearm. It really is a power equalizer or a powerful symbol of political ideology, of ability to respond kind of or feel prepared to respond against political violence or just a sort of general sense of uneasiness about the state of the world. So that we see the gun being this symbolic, offering these symbolic benefits to the consumer and these very practical benefits about being able to defend against some violent victimization or respond to a violent event in the community.
Yeah. Let me reintroduce you both to the audience. We're talking about the marketing of firearms, and we're talking with Michelle Barnhart, and we're talking with Amy Huff. They're both associate professors of marketing at Oregon State University in the College of Business. I imagine, and maybe Michelle, if you want to pick up on that, this idea of, of targeting young men as almost this idea that, you need a gun for status and power.
Well, so this was the, and again, this is Michelle. This was the topic of the lawsuit that the families of the Sandy Hook victims filed against Remington, right? So Remington had an ad that specifically said, "Your man card reissued," in reference to the Bushmaster gun that was used in the shooting there. And so the suit was actually about the advertising, not about selling guns to somebody who might do harm and the harm that it caused, but about the advertising tactic in particular. And so it was under Connecticut law. They were claiming that the advertising was illegal because they were targeting their advertising to a vulnerable group. And the source of that vulnerability was that they were targeting male young men who were at a stage of their development that is not fully developed until their psychology is not fully developed until they're maybe late mid to late 20s. And that this is a group that was particularly susceptible to these ads that were claiming that they were not fully masculine, not fully men yet, and that the way that they could become true men was to arm themselves with this powerful weapon.
Amy, picking up on that, and I think Michelle, you had mentioned something like product placement, and I'm wondering too, in terms of our mass media culture, looking at like a John Wick film or something like that, the idea that there's so much imagery around, the hero slaying the bad guys with a gun, and I imagine that that kind of all sort of fits nicely together. If you're in the gun industry, it's like, wow, a Keanu Reeves, famous actor, using a Glock to do right or to do good.
Yeah, so the gun industry, this is Amy. The gun industry with some marketing for firearms, and particularly for what we would sometimes call modern sporting rifles or assault style rifles, or those types of rifles, we typically see that those ads bring together a couple of themes that are very, very powerful and particularly powerful for young male the segment of potential gun buyers as the, that are young and male and typically white as well. There's sort of this enduring theme of racial inequities within the within gun marketing. Michelle and I have looked at thousands of print ads in our research, and very rarely do we encounter a non-white person in the ad. Which brings me to the, so the answer to your question is the marketing and the advertising of firearms and specifically assault rifles tends to bring together these powerful themes of patriotism, of being this sort of uniquely American thing that you can own an assault style rifle. This idea of masculine protection and that men not only have a moral responsibility, but in fact, maybe a moral obligation to use firearms to protect themselves and protect others, and an enduring theme of aggression and the ability to potentially, and if warranted, be able to be really assertive with a firearm and to use it in a way that defends or responds to things that are perceived to be threatening.
Well, let's do this. We're going to take a quick break. We're talking about the marketing of firearms in light of a recent report that showed Oregon is one of the leading states in terms of firearm ownership and purchases. We're talking with two Oregon State University professors, experts about marketing, especially around firearms. We're talking to Michelle Barnhart and Amy Huff. We'll take a quick break. I'm Michael Dunn, and this is Oregon on the Record. We'll be right back. We're back. I'm Michael Dunn, and you're listening to Oregon on the Record. We're talking about the marketing of firearms in light of a recent report that shows Oregon is one of the leading states in the nation in terms of firearm ownership and purchases. We're talking to two experts about marketing to, firearms. We're talking to Michelle Barnhart, and we're talking to Amy Huff. They're both associate professors of marketing at Oregon State University. Michelle, I want to talk about this sort of a concept of quantity. I mean, obviously, when you market something, you're often talking about the quality of a product. But with guns especially, and you teed this up earlier, one of you did about, you know, some people, most people probably own one or two guns for very specific purposes, might be hunting, might be personal protection. But there are a minority of people, but certainly a lot of them, that own so many guns.
Surely there are people who like to have different guns for different purposes. So you may own a gun to go, hunting birds. You may have you'll have a very different gun if you like to go hunt large game, a deer rifle, and then different guns depending upon if you want a concealed carry or have a gun at home for self-protection. Whether or not you purchase an AR-15 style weapon, which one in five gun owners do own a assault style or modern sporting rifle now. So, why those one in five chose to buy that, it's a very customizable weapon. So maybe they are intrigued by that aspect of it. They're very easy to shoot. They're kind of fun to shoot for people who like to shoot. So there's a lot of reasons, but I will say that, you mentioned the surge in purchases in Oregon recently, and I have a I'm pretty I will speculate, I'll say that a lot of those folks who are buying guns are people who already owned guns. And the reason that I say that is because within the gun community, there's been a lot of attention to what's happening with the Measure 114, which passed back in November of 2022, which would have added some requirements that purchasers go through training and get permitted before they would buy a gun. And that would go for even people who already own guns. So within the gun community, folks who were paying attention to that, once it passed, many of them went out and tried to purchase the next gun that they wanted to buy before those restrictions went into effect. So we saw a huge surge at the end of 2022. And then more recently, there was a motion to remove the stay on that law. So it has not gone into effect because it has been in a stay since it passed, essentially, because of a court case that's been adjudicated. So anyway, in January of this year, that stay was under threat. So the attorney general put in a motion to try to have the stay removed. So we've seen some increases in, say, January to April of this year, Probably in large part due to the fear that it actually is going to go into effect. And so we may be seeing that surge may be due in part to folks who know about that law and wanted to get their next gun before that law went into effect.
Yeah, interesting. Let me reintroduce you to both to the audience. We're talking to Michelle Barnhart and we're talking to Amy Huff. They're both associate professors at Oregon State University. We're talking about the marketing of guns. And I'm wondering too, and perhaps Michelle, let's ask you, obviously this conversation is happening under the shadow of a terrible event which happened with the attempted shooting of candidate and also former President Trump. And we certainly see a lot of mass shooting events that happen, and that's quite terrifying on so many different levels. I guess I'm wondering too, when something like that happens, do gun sales go up in what you've been able to determine? And I'm asking that question because, like you just talked about with Measure 114, and you use the word fear, and I'm wondering for people who are very much want to have guns, do big events, does that drive sales because they're afraid, oh, because X happened, then there might be laws that are going to take away my guns, and so I need to go out and purchase them to be prepared.
Yeah, so there historically we have seen some upticks in gun sales following high-profile shooting events, and we presume that that is due primarily to concern that new laws may be put into effect that would prevent someone who wants to have a gun from going out and purchasing the type of gun that they want. That may be waning, that effect may be waning somewhat as the number of shootings just seems to be on the rise, such that it's almost commonplace now to hear about a mass shooting. So it's, yeah, I would say historically we have seen upticks following shootings, and largely because of this concern that that the laws might change in response.
Yeah. Amy, I want to ask you this. Always I've done many shows where the subject of sort of the very different Oregons. We have a very urban core, and then we have a very rural Oregon. We have a very blue Oregon, and then of course we have a very red Oregon politically. And I'm wondering, in terms of your research, are there big differences in sort of marketing to the more conservative, more rural populations versus the more urban and perhaps even bluer populations. And I guess I'm thinking, does that really fall along the idea of, hunting and sportsmen in the rural areas and personal protection in the urban areas? It's kind of an open question as we close out, kind of how do you market a product like a firearm to such disparate populations that we can see in our own state?
I think that's a great question, and it's something to th that that is difficult to kind of really drill down at, because gun marketing doesn't happen on sort of the same mainstream mass channels that we see for other consumer products. So the marketing is very targeted. That's typically done through print magazines, as Michelle mentioned, as well as at gun shows. Retailers are really, really key. So the sort of personal relationships between a prospective gun buyer and the retailer, the kind of vibe they get from the retail store is really important. And direct mail from gun companies, from different gun organizations, the NRA, other community groups that are sort of gun oriented. So it's hard to get a handle on exactly how the marketing might be different to those different geographic regions, because again, the person would kind of have to opt into it.
Sure.
But we do see a really different sort of marketing strategy or advertising strategy used for different types of guns. So the ads we see for hunting rifles, for example, they emphasize a lot of safety, accuracy, sort of reliability, and the usefulness of the tool. ads that we see for guns that would be used for target shooting or sport shooting. They really emphasize performance and safety. Then there's a whole other domain of ads that really emphasize personal protection, self-defense, concealed carry. Those, again, a lot of times emphasize kind of safety, responsibility, being able to be a careful and responsible gun owner. And then other ads really kind of are tapping into something else. And I think trying to appeal to sort of a different sort of political orientation, perhaps, of the potential consumer. And again, a lot of these are sort of modern sporting rifles, assault style rifles, where we see this kind of theme come up, where they're really kind of trying to convey a very particular gun-centric Second Amendment ideology, and that gun is a really powerful symbol of power equalization, being able to be responsive in kind of a military or combat sort of approach. And so I guess the answer to your question is, I think it's really instead of marketers trying to approach sort of the urban consumers versus the rural consumers, we really see them segmenting people instead of geography based on the type of gun that they might be interested in. So a product sort of segmentation approach instead.
Got it, got it. Well, it's a fascinating subject, and I really appreciate both of you coming on and explaining it, because it pervades American life in many ways, positively and negatively. Michelle Barnhart and Amy Huff, they're both associate professors in marketing at Oregon State University. Again, thanks so much for coming on.
We're happy to be here. Thanks for having us. Pleasure to be here.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Tomorrow, you'll hear from members of the Oregon Legislature who are part of the Joint Committee on Transportation about their statewide tour to determine critical local projects. I'm Michael Dunn, and this has been Oregon on the Record from KLCC. Thanks for listening.